All right, so welcome to our session. It's called Big Data for Every Man. When I Googled every man, I found that guy. So kind of looks like...
It looks like me. I thought it was E for Eric.
A little bit. Well, that's that too. Yeah. So we work at a company called Splunk. Matter of fact, Eric is a co-founder of that company. What does Splunk do, Eric? Go ahead.
No. I think I've not said it.
Yeah, I brought an executive here, so talk about it.
Talk about what part of it?
I don't know.
Any part of it.
Yeah.
We make an engine for machine data. So think of us as a big data company that focuses not on human-generated content, but what exhausted machines throw off. And I think what you're going to see today is an example of some more consumer-oriented machine data. So when we think of machine data, we don't just think about, you know, routers and servers. We often think about what the effect of human-generated content does to the machines, and the output that has, and then how to leverage that. And we try and do it in such a way that you don't need data scientists or rocket scientists or special people, that average Joes like me or the everyman can take advantage and find really cool stuff in this ever-growing vast amount of machine data.
Yeah, this is, however, not one giant big product pitch.
There's no product pitch here.
Yeah, not really. Sorry. So we don't really care. Right. Yeah, so we kind of stare at data all day. Eric said, like, Splunk is this machine data engine, but, I mean, users of it, and even us over the past 5-6 years, we tend to just look at the raw text all the time. So we see information coming off of machines, and, you know, it's kind of interesting. We also sometimes hang out and have fun as well.
That was fun.
Well, it was.
I was miserable.
Right? Yeah. You look kind of miserable, but you have a wand.
Yeah. So I carry around a wand.
I have a spongy dollar sign. So aside from the title of this presentation, I really wanted to call it, you know, what the heck is big data? Because it seems sort of a term that's popular nowadays, and is it larger than small data? That would be inherent in the phrase. Is it smaller than giant data? I don't know, actually. Is it some cool sauce for DBAs? Nope. Not really. So, the idea of big data is really just a simple way to describe a massive problem. Or it's an opportunity depending on your point of view. If you're a person that has to evaluate a huge amount of data, maybe you run a website, maybe you're building a service, maybe just trying to figure out what's happening at South by Southwest on Twitter. The amount of data is more than a human can process and deal with. But also on the other side, it's a really great opportunity. If you have access to a massive amount of data, which we're going to show you some cool stuff later, you can find out some very interesting things. So what we've sort of seen over the past number of years is the real big data is data that's coming out of machines, okay? A good analogy is like the exhaust that comes out of your car. When a machine is on, like these machines right now, like we're streaming live here, okay? So there's servers and networks and all this stuff to make this live stream actually happen. There's a ton of data that's coming out of it that is just happening. Every little piece of information, other than the words that are coming out of my mouth right now, in this whole process, even the wireless network that we're on, is just generating a huge amount of data, whether we like it or not. And you can gain a huge amount of understanding and behavior out of looking at all this data, you know, why you'd want to look at it, or a number of reasons. But the tough part is machine-generated data is really one of the fastest-growing and most complex and most valuable segments of big data. Here's an example. When you go to buy something on, let's say maybe you go to buy something on Amazon.com. Well, Amazon rarely fails, but let's say you go to a website where you're going to purchase something and it fails. There's not a record inside their big database that you didn't purchase something. But there's a whole infrastructure behind it that has a lot of information on if you hit the website, what pages you were there, how far you got in your shopping cart, and all of that. And the lovely thing is the volume is awesome, and it happens automatically. It's getting faster and faster and faster, but the variability in the data is growing. So most people that do any sort of reporting on any sort of format like to have it all in the same format, in the same sort of database, in the same engine that they can do analytics with. But all these vendors that produce products or software developers that produce information, they're off in their own world developing their own format that works for them. So it makes it really difficult for the person who's analyzing big data to actually make sense of it in a very short amount of time. Now, there's some tools that have come out recently that are that help with the process of crunching big data. We're, for the purposes of our meeting today, we're gonna use Splunk to show you some of that, but we're not the only technology that's out there. We're gonna have a little bit of fun, but this is the goal. So the goal here is not the software vendor trying to scare me, because really Lachlan wants to do that. Can you press the down button? There you go.
Sweet.
So yeah, Eric and I are just nice guys that really want to show you cool stuff. Now, yeah, take a look at that little thing. That actually was a desk.
We have a program now. Will it skate in the office? We just put skateboard wheels on stuff and see if it skates. That one kind of worked.
In a minute, I'll raise my thumb when you get to it. Okay. But yeah, our goal is to kind of help show you some cool stuff and give you some neat ways to explore data. And we're going to use Splunk to do that, as I said. So, but when I was thinking about this presentation on big data in general and dealing with it from a number of different aspects, right? So I guess we're kind of a big data company. I mean, we deal with machine data, whether it's coming off your watch or coming off a huge infrastructure. But how the data gets generated and who's a user of it is really kind of the more interesting thing. It's a little hard to see up here, but you in the audience are a producer and a consumer of data. Like, depending on who's here, right? There might be some folks that are, in startups that are launching a new service. You might have been on the startup bus and you were building an app. You might be someone who's using a website. You might be someone who's in marketing that's evaluating information. But whether you're building a brand new service or you're using an app, everything that you do, I mean, it's almost scary the amount of information that's coming out of the little things that you do with your thumb on your phone or with your finger on the computer, on the mouse. Okay, right.
Your car, your refrigerator, your home. Everything these days is throwing. It's just a phenomenal amount of data getting thrown off from consumer devices.
Yeah, and it's all good. Well, it's good depending on who it is or who you are. Another thing to consider is if you're building a service, maybe you're building some cool location-aware device, maybe you're building the next-generation cool product, is you are also a producer of data, even if you're a consumer. So let's say you built a site that has some awesome functionality. Maybe you built a new mobile calendaring engine. Somebody else, there's a good chance that there's a startup right now that a couple years later, after you get yourself off the ground and you've done something really cool, there's some startup that's looking at your stuff going, man, I wish I had access to their calendar data because I have a really good idea. So the minute that you create something or create a service, there's always going to be somebody out there that goes, man, I totally wish I could have access to their data and use it. So you kind of try to be aware of that. And go ahead, Lachlan. So some friends of mine over at a company called Lemon. It's a pretty cool idea. It's location-enhanced mobile opt-in network. And Seth and James have created this company. Some of these guys are like ex-NFL executives. James has been in the mobile industry for a while. They do location-based opt-in. Okay, so for the purposes of helping marketing, an example would be, if I could tell who's actually looking at standing in front of an ad at the New York Marathon, then perhaps the the ad folks could have an idea of the impressions, right? If I could tell that somebody was actually standing in front of there. So the guys at Lemon have this platform that plugs into apps. Now, Lemon is also a consumer, but they're also a producer of data as well, because they work with a number of vendors in the chain to get GOIP data. Now, the cool thing is it's opt-in. So it's not like spying on you. When you, for example, they were in the New York City Marathon's mobile spectator app. And if you click on I'm here to watch, and the little pop-up says, would you like to share your location? Which a surprising amount of people did, which is cool. You know, data's being captured on position, things like battery strength, a couple of things. You know, you're not identified personally because they sort of neutralize the actual user. But, you know, they've created this kind of cool service, and here, hold on. Their data looks a little bit like this. So if one was, and one of the things I also want to do in this session is kind of demystify data. You know, let's take an actual look at it and see what it says, because the humans in the audience should be able to read the things that are on the screen. So for example, you know, in the upper right, this is you opt in, you walk around the New York City Marathon using that app, and this stuff just gets generated. But it all looks like garbage, but it's not really. If you look at the date and the time, if you think about it, if we can capture date and time from somebody, we can potentially understand the path through a system or outside. Device ID. That device ID isn't actually really the identifier of your specific device. It's something they generate so that they can, you know, kind of neutralize your device from it. But if I have everybody's device ID, I could probably figure out how long somebody was actually at the marathon. If I have their latitude and longitude, which, you know, phones generate if you allow them to, I can potentially tell their position. And, you know, if we look down at the bottom, you know, that column right in the bottom just happens to be battery strength. Now, unfortunately, you can't tell what this stuff is unless I tell you what it is. You can't. I mean, you guys are smart. You could figure out the first column is time. But no one knows what 65, the device ID, you're halfway smart. You could probably figure out that that's the longitude and latitude, and nobody knows what 195, 90, and 90, right? So, but it's data's being generated, it's coming out, and it's great, good. Matter of fact, if you're building a service or if you're using something, request as much data as possible. It's actually better to have more than less, it's, you know, when you're watching things that are happening. Go ahead, click. All right.
End of slides.
Yeah. Well, yeah, for now. Hit, can you move over, bud? All right. Dad's got to
get
in front of the
computer. While he's doing this, so if you think about it, and this may be too abstract, but the world now is being fully recorded. Like, you have a video camera, audio recordings, right? We're comfortable with those. We know what those are like. Oh, you're leaving? Everybody, big round of applause for Lachlan.
He's getting a snack.
Oh, he's hungry.
Lachlan needs a snack.
So what's happening today, and you just don't realize it, is everything's being recorded. Just literally everything is recorded. If you were somehow omniscient, if there was a data god could look at the exhaust of what's coming off right now and answer just about anything that's going on the planet. Literally, they could look at the exhaust of what's going on from our interaction with our technology and be able to answer anything we could possibly want. The trick is that all of that data was never intended for human consumption, right? It's exhaust. So the real problem you have is how do you take all the stuff that's getting thrown off on the planet and begin to answer questions, whether it's medical data, whether it's environmental, whether it's power and utility. It doesn't matter. All the exhaust is there to answer just about anything. The trick we have is there's no way for us to interpret that data.
And it's sort of working with Lemon and looking at the data that's there. If, you know, we go back to that other slide where we had time and we had device and we had battery strength and there was a few other fields, we're using Splunk for this, but it really doesn't matter. It's just more like talking about the data. So total number of opt-in users for the New York City Marathon. Now, when's the New York City Marathon? I think it was November 6th of last year. So that's a particular time period. Now, people downloaded the app beforehand. Matter of fact, if you look right here, we'll go right to this guy. We look at this one. That right here is in-app mobile position signaling. So if the New York City Marathon was on like the 6th, why are we getting GPS locations from people beforehand? Obviously, they downloaded the app, had it running, tried it out, and probably left it running and... Or, you know, a couple people tried it out, closed it, rebooted their phone, or whatever. But to figure out what's happening within the marathon, we actually have to bound the request by time. Okay. So, you know, maybe they had a couple thousand mobile opt-in users at the New York City Marathon. I created this cool little widget because I thought it was pretty. Okay, this is the search behind that. And then if we start looking at unique attendees by time. So who's showing up at the marathon? Some people are leaving. Oh, and this is over the whole, I'm looking at 15-minute slices over a day period. And then probably towards the latter end of the race, and this is 8 to 5 p.m. Eastern time, we start to see more people and some dropping off. Now, this is all the data that's being generated from the devices while it's happening. And the ability, we got this after the fact, you know, a couple months ago, but the ability to actually see this while it happens would be pretty cool if you were a consumer of this data. I kind of think real time is the new historical. Because history is sort of happening the minute that this moment passes, it's historical. But if you keep watching while things happen, it's really, history is just one big amalgamation of what happened and is what is happening. And I don't think there's a difference, honestly. Some technology solutions focus on the difference between history and real time, but why? I don't really understand that. Now, one thing that Seth, the CEO of Lemon, told me, I asked him if I could talk about Lemon, because I thought it was a cool use case. And he said, yeah, but he said, you know, talk about the battery strength. Because every time that the device signals its location, as we talked about, it was getting accuracy, it was signaling its GOIP, or geolocation, and also battery strength is reading it off the device. It turns out that there was this, fact that Apple iPhones eat up your battery using GPS with this app was actually a myth. Because if we look at over time, from the beginning of the day, with iOS 4, and I don't know if iOS 5 was out at the time, this was November of last year, is we start to see battery go down over time during the day, but it never really gets to a supremely critical point. Now, could people have plugged their laptops, or could they have plugged their phones in? Perhaps. Or they had their own battery systems? Sure. But they're able to gain information on this by looking at, they're able to understand their audience by seeing like what the likelihood of people are going to continue using their app for the entire day instead of going, gosh darn it, this stupid app is eating up my battery and now I can't text. So the ability to have impact and understanding of what the producers of your data are doing so that you can then consume it. And then also, you know, if you can take and find out exactly where people are. So this is just the whole day's worth of information coming off the marathon. But we're able to see clusters of folks. If we changed and look at the time range, you know, obviously there's a group of people that are right in this location. And even the ability to go through time.
They're all over the place.
They're all over the place. Yeah, they're all over the place, and I'm just looking at the entire day, right? But if we go and, for example, in a short period of time, animate this, I could probably see the movement of people. And the goal also is to look at, if I'm selling an ad platform and working with advertisers, it would be really nice if I could actually tell them if people were in front of the ad, right? Obviously, you have to opt in, so this isn't anybody spying on you. And, you know, the position of humans in relation to advertisements is really difficult to measure out in the physical world. I don't even know how they do it. I guess maybe some sort of statistical methods on cars drive by or census populations or whatever. So the thing that I really liked about the data, you know, that Lemon provided is in a single line of data, we were actually able to gain a huge amount of information and use it for about five different purposes, you know. And again, the raw data itself kind of just looks a little bit, you know, like this. It's just the actual data that's coming off of the system. Right there. So that exact data right there that I showed you on the screen in the screencast was just used to pick some fields out, and then, of course, you know, if I want to go, let's say, look at accuracy or battery level or device or whatever, it doesn't really matter. It's very easy for me to just go and kind of pivot through time and even say, let's do an average over time. And, you know, the technology that we built at Splunk, I'm a user of it more than a developer. And I like the fact that I can give in to my every whim of data that's there. You're going to see some really interesting things with social data in a minute. So if you have some questions on what people are doing now and you want to play a little bit, we'll do that in a minute.
Can I make one quick point here?
Go ahead. Yeah.
As a developer and a builder of these services, the interesting part here is this was done without Lemon really thinking in advance. So let's face it, if Lemon had thought 9 months in advance of the marathon they wanted to build something like this, they could have done it, right? They could have thought about what data to collect, how am I going to get the data out of my systems, go build a data warehousing system or a database and shove it all in. And, you know, sure, they could have spent 9 months doing it. I think what's interesting about this is just a very quick look of the exhaust they're already producing. They didn't have to do anything unique. They literally, they're throwing off all this data, and they merely connect up something that says, I want to look at that data and try and figure out what's going on.
But if you got the opportunity to actually think about the things that you could capture, you know, you might design things in a really interesting way.
Throw off more exhaust. Yeah. Interesting for you is just, if you're a builder of a service, throw off exhaust. It's just so easy to leave little breadcrumbs around that later on, 9 months after. See, the problem here is it's 9 months later after when you want to ask the question, well, what happened last year at this time? If you haven't generated the little breadcrumbs, it's really hard to know. So our philosophy, if you're talking to developers, hey, guys, when you're in writing something or doing something, just leave a little breadcrumb. The cost of a few bytes of this and here and there is nothing. Don't even worry about why you need it. Don't think about when you're going to need it, how you're going to need it. Just leave footprints behind.
What I found is also, to Eric's point, is, you know, Eric is sort of asking developers to start producing more exhaust. But they're actually just not aware how the people will consume it after the fact. I mean, developers typically like to focus on writing the best software in the world, and if nobody asks them to create better data coming out of it, perhaps they won't do it. Oh, real quick, did you check in on Foursquare or tweet? If you could tweet, if you have your Twitter app up, pound Splunk, pound South by Southwest, obligatory photo of a cute-looking cat, please. So all this data can be pretty cool and empowering. I thought that graphic was kind of cool, so I put it in there. Except there's one little problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little problem. It's not him. Okay. A lot of it is pretty scary. And a lot of it looks like this. Matter of fact, does anybody know what kind of data that is? Anybody know? Yeah, that's pretty good. Cisco
ASA
data.
ASA is a giveaway.
How would you have known that?
ASA.
Yeah, well, ASA, but without seeing the word ASA, there are probably some people that never would have known that that's from a Cisco firewall. But it has some interesting information in it. And we're actually expected, for the most part, to talk to this data a little bit like this. One big, giant pile of SQL statements that business analysts get good at and all of that, which I'm not totally sure what that says because it's very difficult to read. But the language at which one talks to their data could be a lot better. Now, the tools can be a lot better, but the language is also important. So can anybody tell me, before we do that, now this data, anybody kind of guess what that is? That's a Foursquare check-in. And did somebody become the mayor? Yeah, no one became the mayor, so no change. And what was the name of the venue? How'd you figure out the name of the venue? Right, it told us that there's a field right there. So a human like us, I wish I was a developer because I think I'd be dangerous, but I'm not. I'm not going to tell Eric that, though. But the human, like myself, can read this and kind of understand what this data is versus that Cisco ASA data, which is just, it's important, and it comes off of firewalls. Cisco makes a firewall called ASA. But it's not inherent in seeing the data exactly what the meaning of it is. This data format is something known as JSON, or JavaScript Object Notation. It's like what XML should have been, because everyone has bastardized XML and put in tons of crap in it. And this is just, here's the data. And the interesting thing about JSON data is it's hierarchical. We're going to see that. So, for example, a tweet might have information in it, like the graphics that are in there, if there are two or three graphics that are attached to a particular tweet. So, does anyone guess what that says and what that's going to create? Exactly. Perfect. Yeah. I looked for Foursquare, and I want a time chart, I want a count, but also by what? Venue name. Right. So that is a little bit more humanistic than big, massive friggin' SQL statement. And the languages to talk to data are getting a lot better for us humans. Okay. I'll go back to the data. So when I started preparing for this presentation, I thought I was supposed to put a link on here. Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right here. So I was working with a developer at Splunk and, you know, a partner of ours. And to demonstrate data and big data and what's happening, I thought, social data would be really cool to demonstrate. Not because social data is really cool, because social data is people. Like, Soylent Green is people. Okay, so in the systems that I have real-time feeds coming across a number of different social devices. But I needed some data because, again, I'm not a developer, although I have access to them. And I called up a friend of mine in Boulder, Colorado, and he said, sure, I'll help you out. And his name is Judd Valesky. And he created a service called GNIP. GNIP is sort of sponsoring me today to have access to a nice wealth of real-time information that's coming off of the social world. But GNIP's job in life is to take all these social feeds from gosh knows how many different things, everything in WordPress to Facebook to Flickr to the big giant feed of Twitter and all this stuff, and put an API or a way for developers to get access to that data from one central place, which is kind of nice because then a developer, for example, doesn't have to code to everybody's particular method, or 15 million developers aren't calling up WordPress and saying, can I have access to X, Y, and Z? Because also, if one was to stream all the data from WordPress, it would probably be a massive stream. So GNIP does a really good job of aggregating all this data and providing it. So let's take a look at some of it. Yeah. You drank my water? Awesome. Okay. All right, cool. So I have a stream of data coming in on things that are happening from a number of different sources. Interesting things like, well, boring things like hashtags trending this hour. So if there's any sort of profanity in here, well, it's just Twitter. You can probably go to the Twitter page and kind of figure that out. So, you know, from a single stream, but the cool thing is this is actually happening in real time. Right. That's awesome. All right. Okay. You got to love that. Whoops. Hey, at least South by Southwest is in the top 20, in the top 10. But the cool thing is this is trending now.
Is this the public API?
Is this the public API? This is not the Firehose. No. This is some portion of data that's coming. For those of you who might know anything about GNIP, I'm using one of their products called the DecaHose. The DecaHose is a random 10% of Twitter. Stop. Okay. It's just a random 10% of Twitter, which is probably fairly representative of actually the stuff that's going on Twitter. Because if we went over to Twitter's page, we'd probably find those same hashtags as trending. But the thing I like about this is it's really happening. As people are tweeting, information is here. Or in real time. And again, like my idea of historical is real time. So let's see. The ratio of people who are tweeting that are popular or like other people, right? Followers versus friends. And things like, how are people tweeting right now? Okay. So, and this is just all of the devices that are there from this particular feed. So most people are tweeting on the web, but some people are using Android. And potentially, if you were looking at, if you had access to Twitter's data, maybe you became a customer of GNIPS or worked with Twitter themselves, you might find some information in here that is valuable. You probably wouldn't necessarily care about what devices people are tweeting from for every piece of information, but if you were looking for something on South by Southwest or your company or underwear, right? Yeah, underwear. It might be kind of interesting. So I also have directly integrated with Foursquare's API as well. Foursquare is really interesting because Foursquare is really the Soylent Green of the web. It is really people. Twitter is people talking. Foursquare is people doing. Although I can tell where you're talking from on Twitter if the information is provided in the feed. But it's really interesting. This is just the world. Like, where are people checking in right now? So when I first got access to this data, I started, naturally, the questions have got to be popping up in your head right now. Like, who's at home? Where in the world are they at home? Why are people checking in at home? I don't know, maybe to make sure that everyone knows they're at home so nobody comes up and robs their stuff. also, you start to look at the distribution of venues. And again, this is real time. Or things like, where are they shopping? Target wins. Earlier when I started looking at the data itself, initially, I started looking at coffee. I started looking at where are people drinking coffee around the world, and or what they were eating at lunch. And it's interesting to see like McDonald's and Starbucks fight for lunch. Everybody goes to Starbucks. But then I wonder, like, who's at Target, right, now? Well, who? Not people, because Foursquare doesn't provide me the access to you as a person. They give demographic information, but I can't actually track what Eric is doing. It would be nice, but that way I could sort of avoid him when I needed to.
You're more than welcome to track me.
Okay. So who's hanging at Target? Looks like males are winning right now as far as Target, but you know, females are spiking here and there. And I just find it so interesting that people are checking in at Target. Well, what's actually, and then when I was talking to somebody about this data, they found it more interesting that people were checking in at Walmart. But hey, you know, it's a giant business that has a rep. Somebody that goes to Walmart is going to check in. People like Foursquare, that's what they do with it. Who's winning the coffee wars right now? And some of the reason why we see dupes is because the venue might be created by the venue itself. Or the venue might be created by a user, because on Foursquare you can actually say, I'm going to make a new venue, okay? It's pretty much not a surprise that the big swinging dude in the room is Starbucks. But, you know, got the Tim Hortons folks. Isn't that in Canada?
Yep.
Tim Hortons?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Good donuts there. Pete's, Dunkin' Donuts. But and again, this is just everybody. So if I wanted to, you know, drill in and figure out, well, let's kind of look at Starbucks itself. Should be able to drill in here. And of course, this is going to take me to the very utilitarian interface of Splunk, but of the search app, but I actually think this is kind of awesome because I get access to the actual raw data, right? And here's that nice Foursquare data. But if we look on the left-hand side here, there's a set of fields that are over here. And Splunk, you know, again, I'm excited about Splunk because not because I work there, because of what it can do. Maybe we look at Pathname. I think I got to pull this out here. Okay. So that's food and coffee shops. But what's probably more interesting is the region name. Okay. So what were we looking at? Starbucks. So in this particular, at 11:35 Sunday morning, which is like 2 minutes ago. If that isn't real time, I don't know what is. Well, technically that's not real time because it's 2 minutes ago. But I drilled into that one, I drilled into that 2 minute period, although it's quite easy for me to just change this to a real time window and watch it. But if I look over that particular period of time and I look at this, you know, city name, oh, Istanbul, country name, United States, you know, maybe I'm wondering, and I drill in, I'm wondering like, well, okay, what else is going on in Istanbul? And if we get rid of the whole coffee shop thing, we'll end up seeing other venues and venue categories, right? Category ID, a category node name. Okay, so a lot of people are at pubs. Mm-hmm. So they're at pubs, and some of them are at home. And there's some folks that are at cafes. It turns out the people who are checking in on Foursquare at Starbucks are just a very small set of the people that are checking in Istanbul and whatnot. Looks like homes are winning. Homes are winning. Good. Maybe those people who were at the bar just went home. But if you notice what I just did, I gave in to my own curiosity about the data. And that's the big important thing about data in general and big data as a thing. Because it's just exhaust, like Eric talked about, out of a system. And I should be able to ask any question if I can understand the data itself. I kind of like that. I got a little bit voyeuristic when I was playing with this stuff, obviously. And I think somebody else, we had some other folks in here that work at Splunk. I said, yeah, I'm kind of busy. Can you give me a hand and go in there and just search on stuff and save things? And someone obviously went in and like, who's going to the gym? Okay, males versus females. What gym is the most popular gym out there? Right? For the sake of the API agreement we have with Foursquare, these are not the actual statistics. We're doing some sort of modification on it, and the scale is being displayed in a different way, so it's, you know, fairly difficult to figure out the exact numbers, because I can't tell you the exact numbers. But again, if given access to this data, you could find out a bunch of cool things. But you know what I wonder is, what is going on here? So I'll click on South by Southwest. People Watching was actually a good name for that dashboard. So in the last 12 hours, here we go, and in real time, last 12 hours, but also tracking real time, that means any mention of South by Southwest is going to continue pegging that number up, is on Twitter, is showing here. So we can sort of, if I were to have converted this into a time chart, we could see the conversation level about South by Southwest on Twitter as people are showing up. Where are they right now? That is a live stream of where people are checking in right now. Those are actual humans that are checking in somewhere. What they're doing, we could probably figure that out. Like if they're at the Hilton Austin, they're probably at a session.
Do you want to take questions now, or you want to wait till the end?
Yeah, if anybody has any
just
questions.
Yell stuff out. It's interactive.
This is still the 10% sample.
Okay.
This is the whole thing.
Right. That's Foursquare. That's the whole thing. Okay? Twitter, we get, if I were to have access to the fire hose, it's just, for what I'm doing, it's just too much noise, right? One of the other things that Gnip is providing me, they have this cool feature called PowerTrack. So I have PowerTrack running. The Decahose is really there for kind of just the noise and the macro level statistics on what people are talking about. But PowerTrack, I'm looking for terms, okay? So if you type in South by Southwest, it goes straight into my Splunk server. So Apple, iPad, the political candidates, South by Southwest, Splunk, of course, Austin. So I, and a couple other ones. So, yeah.
Can you pull up the tweets? Can you see the tweets?
Yeah. Yeah, I could actually, yeah, sure. Matter of fact, I'll show you that in a different context. Yeah, we'll go to the tweets. We'll get to the raw data. But it's the tweets. Does it matter? I mean, because for one aspect, the truth is what it is. If American Express has this sync program now. When I was in Dallas, I checked into this cool hotel called the Nilo. If you're in Plano, it's a really kind of cool New York-y hotel. When I checked in on Foursquare, it popped up this thing that said, sync up your Amex card and we'll give you $5 off. So I was like, all right, that's fine. Is that, one thing we don't have, or at least for Foursquare, is the influence on why they checked in, or perhaps what the referrer of the check-in was. One might be able to get access to that data so that if one was analyzing it, they could appropriately weight the paid, kind of paid check-ins, although check-ins really aren't paid. But again, if one had access to that data, one could probably weight it properly.
If that was an important thing to you, we could show you how you could factor out people that only checked in at certain venues and or repeatedly. So I think SEO will be appropriate for the same market, right? You're going to have to go around and look at all this other data and begin to have the same algorithms you do for optimizing everything else and how to factor that out. But today, if you said, hey, Eric, there's a 20% of these people are just being paid to go do this. Can you please remove them from the list? We could do that.
I mean, it's a matter of clicking.
Keep going. It's interactive.
Look, just one of the interesting things. The data is actually, it's kind of showing, rather than showing who's winning the coffee wars, it's who's winning the coffee wars for people who check in.
Yep. Right. It's a good point, right? And then,
that can be modeled to represent actually, if you know what percent of people actually are checking in, you can figure that out.
And this is just this data. Remember, there's lots of other, if you were in the coffee business, if you were Starbucks, right? I mean, we're picking on coffee. There would be lots of other data you could stick in here. What's interesting about what's happening here is we're taking Twitter and Foursquare. I could take Twitter, Foursquare, my point of sale device information. I get line length at Starbucks. They actually have line length data. How long is the line at any point in time? So if I'm a company, I can take, what's the effect of line length on my tweets, right? And look at it and say, well, look at that. When the line gets beyond seven people start. So this is just sort of randomly taking data, but if you were really in this business, you'd start mashing up, every piece of data, whether it's logistics data or, whatever. Put camera someplace and count people. I don't care.
Right.
Can I follow? May I follow up on that?
So absolutely.
I would like to understand it precisely. You can only measure my geolocation if I give it to you, right?
Correct.
Okay. So your sample pool for a lot of this is, I would guess, mostly Foursquare then. If I'm tweeting inside of a Walmart, you can't locate me, can you?
It depends on how you're tweeting. Okay.
Well, yeah. If I signal to you that I'm in Walmart while I'm tweeting, you get that.
Right. If you signal with your device, like if you're using, for example, Twitter's app, and you've agreed to share your location, it's likely in the actual data that shows. It gives not all tweets have geolocation attached to them, but some do.
But
very low.
Yeah. So Gnip, as I understand it, is aggregating data from all these disparate sources, including Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare. But your actual sample pool for making the assumptions for the coffee shops and retail is actually quite small, isn't it? For instance, I could be in the A&P next to the Starbucks, and somebody could. I don't know that they can measure me that precisely, and they might give the credit to Starbucks for my geolocation.
Yeah, perhaps they would. And really, the reasons why people check in are really kind of what one would want to get at. Like, why would somebody share their geographic location? Obviously, maybe to play the game that's Foursquare. Foursquare is sort of not really a game anymore. It's more a bit more social. But to kind of signal, for whatever reason, here I am. OK? Okay.
It's not precise, by the way. No one's claiming this. By the way, I think Michael Wild started to put this together a few days ago. This is not to show, you know, precision. Again, if this was your business, you could begin to take a look at a lot of those things and dial them down. We're just showing you a demo right here of something random to try and get your attention.
But there's a bias to the data because it's the user who chooses. Pick other data.
There's other data which has higher fidelity. If that was your business, you'd marry it with something that was higher fidelity and more accurate and more granular. And you're just marrying, you're putting the two of them together to say, look, here is what I see happening in my venues because I own them, and right, I'm going to marry them with what other social data, what other data you want to marry with it. Our point here is that the world is full of this data that's getting thrown off. Here's the public one that you understand. A lot of data we couldn't show you that you go, like, what the hell is that? It's coming off a fracking rig in the middle of Idaho right now, right, and what the hell's that got? But the point here is we're saying is, look, everything's throwing off this data. This is Foursquare and Twitter. There's lots of things you can marry together, and you can marry whatever you want.
Right.
Could I like to know what radio, if you can't call radio listening, what radio station?
Right, like iHeartRadio is an example, is an app that does that. Yeah, okay. Totally. Yeah, and one, if one is an app developer, one has a lot of choices. Question?
Yes, actually. Are you indexing the data and then you can do stuff with it?
It's actually happening in real time. So the indexing, and for this question about the technology, we're taking the feeds live, eating them from GNIP as fast as GNIP sends them to us, and they're going straight into Splunk. They're being indexed and searchable and map-reduced and analyticized while I search. That's actually happening right there.
Can you run keywords?
We don't care. Right? Yeah, sure.
It doesn't really matter. I mean, the sample... You know,
any language. It doesn't matter. We don't care.
Yeah, there's... Depending on what's in there, but...
keyword searches? Can you run keyword
searches? Yes. Well, for the GNIP question, we are doing a keyword search because I don't need the whole fire hose, but I am doing keyword searches on things like South by Southwest, Austin, Splunk, the political candidates. Yes, question.
So if you're familiar with MRI or Simmons or any of the panel data sources, one of the things that they're doing is they're taking in that data from your sample and then they're transforming it to become more of a representative sample. Mm-hmm. Yeah? And I think table out this bias that we're kind of talking about. Right?
Sure.
Are you familiar of any source that's sucking in this exhaust data and then putting a modeling layer into it like that to make it more representative?
Yep, come talk to us after. This is not a Splunk pitch, right? I want to not talk about any customers. If you really care, you can come talk to us later. But we're just trying to show, look, please produce more exhaust. Look, there's lots of exhaust out there, people. Take advantage of it.
But
and then you can come talk to me.
Be clear, like, I'm a consumer of this data, yeah? So if I don't know of anyone that's doing that. I was wondering if you're aware of a provider of the data that is actually doing the modeling as well.
Talk about it after. Everybody is a producer of data. There are companies who have been around for 100 years now waking up and saying, holy crap, the data we're generating as a business is potentially more valuable than our traditional business. Yeah. So, yes, it's happening in every nook and cranny, all over the country, all over the world.
So, as a non-technical person, the thing that would be interesting to me to hear about would be whether, in aggregating all this data,
correct.
Your brain's pretty good at getting subtle influence. I mean, you walk around all day long, you know, creating biases. Your whole brain's designed around bias of what it's seeing. Is this real? Is it not? Is it important? Is it not?
But it's not easy for me to look at a giant spreadsheet of data.
No.
Yeah, but if you look at that. So, for example, like if you were just typing in some words, so at least, again, not a product pitch, but what I'm typing at the top, some of it is like tell it to geolocate and a couple other things. But I'm just saying basically index equals Twitter track, which is all the power track stuff, and then anything that has geo coordinates on it. Okay? But and the word South by Southwest and Austin, right? So just the fact that I'm looking at tweets that have geolocation signals and are talking about Southwest and are from Austin, the fact that I look at the histogram right there might be a signal to me that there's something that I should pay attention to or drill into or ask a bit more questions.
Right.
Right.
So sort of in the same vein, though, as a non-technical person, or right. how easy or hard is that to do if you aren't very good at thinking in terms of those kinds of queries, even though that is obviously much clearer than sort of traditional query writing?
The hard part is not the language. The hard part is the word problem.
Right.
Okay? It's if you understand, A, you got to understand what's in the data. Okay? Hopefully, it's easy to understand. B, you got to understand what questions you could ask of it. Obviously, if you don't have a timestamp, you can't tell when people were somewhere, but that sample set might be over an entire week and you don't care about the individual time. And then one might ask, well, if only I had this other data source. Like, for example, I don't have city and state at all. But I'm getting that on the fly by mashing it up with another service that takes the longitude and latitude and then applies it in real time. So I said, you know what? All I got is longitude and latitude. I can't produce a chart for you that shows longitude and latitude because it wouldn't make sense. I need to geolocate that. So I went into the next further step and went, let's see if we can wire up another service to do that.
But like, that's mostly clickable. You could have, you could have clicked your way to most of that.
I mean, I was thinking of, like, the Dunkin' Donuts and Dunkin' Donuts.
Right? You just click on that.
I just want to see those things together.
You can click, so what, again, not product pitch. You can click your way to most of this. Again, if you're interested, I can explain how lots of people who are non-technical use this type of thing to answer things. And there is a bump learning curve, but once you're over that, it's pretty liberating. I mean, you can answer just about anything about whatever you want.
Was that okay? Was the data was cool? Awesome. Good. All right. Hold on. Wait a minute. Just when you think you're all done, like I said, there's another consumer that you may have forgotten. We can keep the lights up
That's
if
right.
you want. Yeah. There, as I said earlier, there is probably someone with a different perspective out there that sees your service as an input. Because, by the way, the Lemon guys actually, they produce the app part that goes inside the app. But the geo data comes from somewhere else. And we went and talked to that other vendor who wasn't providing a real-time stream because he didn't know anyone wanted it. And we said, hey, can we get it? Can you guys give us a real-time stream? They're like, oh, yeah, we were totally thinking about doing that. But if nobody goes and asks them, there's a chance that they might not. So a public service announcement, if one could say, is demand, not ask. But demand real-time data. Demand it in a stream over the web and demand it in a format that a human like myself can read. I'm kind of nerdy, but again, I don't write code for a living. So if you give me that JSON data, it's easy. It's also a nice thing because developers can actually use it. But it's easy to read. If you don't ask for it, people aren't going to do it. Why? Not because they're jerks. They just don't know there's somebody out there that's going, hey, can I have your data? So, we still have a couple more minutes. If there's any questions that you might have been saving until this exact moment.
Can you please return your PSA?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. Oh, by the way, I'll give you the URL for this presentation so you can just go use it. It's on SlideShare, so.
Yeah?
Oh, cool.
When we called them, they just gave us some of our problems, our issues, and they just gave us a person to work with. Is there a service, is there a source out there that of a list of vendors that work with Nick Data?
Well, you mean like products that might work with it?
Yeah.
Well, GNIP is an API provider, as you know. So by default, everything, anybody that wants to program it. We got together a couple weeks ago and wrote a little thing that plugged into GNIP and took the stream. All we need to do is access it. But from that, any product could work with it, provided that they produced, you know, data, or they were able to access the stream and then do something with it. So, anyways, I wanted to thank you guys, y'all, for coming. I'm Michael.
Eric.
That's Eric. That's my son, Lachlan. That's a picture of our dog, because I figure, like, why not have a cute dog on the screen as the last thing you see on the screen? That's the name of Sheesh, right? Yeah, but you can go to Splunk.com and figure that out. Here's the URL for, it's slide.write this / barbecue rules. Okay. Yeah. So, yes. Actually, I'll pop it up here and say large type. So, yeah, that'll take you to the presentation. I put it up on SlideShare this morning after I finished it, still bitter about the fact that time had changed and it was going to be hell waking up. But I do everything at the last minute, and it usually works. So, yeah, it's there. The whole thing is there. If you want to review it or take a screenshot of that public service announcement, rock on. Wanted to thank you for hanging out with us for the past 57 minutes, a little longer because some of y'all were in here. And if you got any questions, we're leaving, but we're leaving the room so we can talk to you out there. I don't have anything else going on. So, thank you for coming.